stay tuned for The Lynn Show. I am dedicating this entire month to shows highlighting the Sarasota Ballet Company, an extraordinary company led by Ian Webb. If you've listened to the show, you may have heard my interview with Ian, which is amazing. And today, I'm playing an interview with his wife, Margaret Barbieri, an extraordinary ballet dancer, teacher, and now ballet stager. Perhaps you don't know what that is. I didn't know until Margaret explained it to me. In the weeks following my interview with Margaret, I will be playing interviews with others from the company. But I wanted to start with Margaret because she demonstrates what it means to have dedicated an entire life to ballet. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down
Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about discovery. Well, maybe it's recovery or uncovery. If you've been listening, you know that I believe that we're all keeping secrets. Secrets about ourselves, and not only from other people, but from ourselves as well. Secrets about who we really are, what we can do, what is possible for us. And again, if you've been listening, you've heard me say over and over that this information, this belief of mine, grows out of my over 30 years as a psychotherapist. And if you want to know more about me, you can find that on my website, thelynnshow.com. That's thelynnshow. Don't leave out the E, because you'll get another Lynn. But if you're curious about me and the work I do and anything else about me, you can go up on the website. On the website, you can find a link that says email me. And if you click on that, you can ask me questions or make comments or whatever you like. There's also links to the podcasts, the old shows. So if you are curious about the kinds of things I've said in the past about how one discovers what one is keeping a secret even from oneself, you can hear those old shows on the website. In addition to talking about how we keep secrets about ourselves from ourselves and others, and how you can learn about that and what you can do about it, I sometimes give some exercises, and last week I offered the family pie exercise, an exercise in which you make a circle, break it up into as many pieces as there were people in your family of origin, write the names of those people in those pie pieces, and then write all of the qualities that you think of when you think of those people, including yourself. I promised to explain more about that, and I'm going to do a little of that today, but I'm not going to have that much time, because the interview that I'm playing today with Margaret Barbieri, which I did not want to edit any more of, and it's pretty long. So all I'm going to say about the family pie today is that if you did it, and as I suggested last week, if you looked at the qualities that you put in your pie piece, you will see the qualities that I think demonstrate your cover story. That is, how you present to the world what it is about yourself that you are comfortable with. You may not like it, but it's what you believe about yourself, and it's what you present to the world. I believe that every quality that exists in any system, and your family of origin was a system, exists in every person in that system. So if you look at the other qualities that you've written in other pie pieces, the pie piece for your mother or your father or your sister or your brother, or many of your sisters or brothers, an aunt or grandma or anybody who lived with you. If you look at those pie pieces and you see the qualities there, then I believe that those qualities also belong to you. But you've been assigned the qualities in your particular pie piece, just as everybody else has been assigned the qualities in their particular pie piece. Once we've been assigned a quality, we think that's all there is to us. We think that those qualities are the ones that allow us to continue to be in the system. They are our place in the family. Now, if you have a quality that you would like to have and you see it in another pie piece, you can know that at least I believe that that quality is already yours, but you have hidden it under cover. You are pretending not to have it because it was assigned to someone else in the system, and it's their place in the family, and it's not yours. So, if there's a quality that you want, let's say you were assigned shy, unassertive, and at this time in your life, you realize that it's important for you to be able to be more assertive. Perhaps you need to speak up at work, or perhaps there's a relationship that you're in that's not nice, maybe even abusive, and it's important for you to be able to defend yourself. If there's someone in your family in whose pie piece you have written or of whom you think has the quality of assertiveness, the ability to stand up for themselves, then you too have that quality. Although it is almost certainly undercover, and you don't know about it yet. In shows to come, I will be explaining why it's so difficult to access a quality which I believe you already have, how you can go about it, and what you might encounter as you do it. But for now, if you're curious about this process, just look at your pie piece. See those qualities that were assigned to you, and look at everything else in your system, and see if there's something else in there that you're sorry you weren't assigned. And now, the other thing that I do in my show is I play interviews from my series called Anatomy of an Artist, people who make their living or their life with an art. And today I'm playing an interview with a very special woman. Margaret Barbieri is a ballet dancer. She has been a ballet dancer since she was 5 years old, although she and her family had never heard of ballet. She was a sickly child, they say, although she's not actually sure she was sick. And when they took her to the doctor said she needs exercise. Take her to a ballet class. Well, her mother had never heard of ballet and had to ask around where was a ballet class. But Margaret took to ballet as the proverbial duck to water. And once Mummy saw that Margaret really loved ballet, she encouraged Margaret to do all of the other arts, sing, dance, act, all of which Margaret excels at. And, well, I'm not going to tell you her story. It's quite interesting. I only want to say, listen to the remarkable way that this young woman falls into one thing after another, including the very, very prized role of Giselle. So here, let Margaret tell the story herself. Margaret Barbieri.
I'm sitting here with Margaret Barbieri. I do an interview series called Anatomy of an Artist. And I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Mm-hmm. And I always ask them the same question, and it is, how did it happen? How did you find it? How did it find you?
Oh, well, do you mean when I first started?
Absolutely. What was the very beginning?
When I was very young.
How young?
5 years old.
Five.
My mother was always worried about me. Always worried, anyway, even when I was 25, 50. But she thought I was a bit of a sickly child. I do remember that there was a habit that I always woke up in the mornings and I said, oh, I feel sick. Now, whether it was a habit or whether I did actually feel sick, I don't remember. And so she took me to the doctor and, you know, all the tests and everything, and absolutely nothing wrong with this child. What she probably needs is a bit of exercise and meet a lot of other children her age. Why didn't you take her to this thing called ballet? My mother had never heard of it. And she asked in the neighborhood, you know, does anybody know where you go? And there was another little child there in the neighborhood who was going for ballet lessons, and that's how it started. And what I do remember, I was incredibly shy, and I wouldn't speak unless I felt I had something to talk about. So I think I didn't make friends that easily when I was a child. And this did enable me to meet other children. But also, I do remember that from the moment I started, I found that this was something I really felt was what I wanted to do. I didn't know about any kind of career, but I really felt in my element. It was really strange. I'd never learned anything before, but here I was. I loved the music. I loved dancing around it. And apparently I showed talent.
Apparently.
Yeah. But as I say, nobody in the family really knew anything about it. Of course, my mother was amazing, and she opened all the doors for me. You know, oh, well, if you're going to learn ballet, then you've got to learn about, you know, singing and drama and music. And so all the doors were open. Because,
really?
Oh, well, if you're not going to become a dancer, you know, you've got to know all these other things as well. You know, so you've got to be educated. You've got to have that, this, and everything. So she was determined.
So she sort of educated herself as well in order to make sure that you
she
had everything.
She wanted me to have every opportunity. And, I'm hugely grateful to her, because everything that I did in those early years has helped me in my later years. Because I love acting, and it was always something that in my dancing career I was noted for. And I'm sure it came from those early years of doing drama and having those opportunities.
Yeah. Okay, so let me just get it clear. Mm. So you're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, mm. right?
Well, I didn't start all the acting then.
No, but at some point in that young years, yes. You were not only dancing, but taking drama, taking voice, so Right.
Yes, everything, as well as all my, obviously, school academic work, you know.
So you were a very busy kid.
Yes, I was. She used to take me from place to place. when I was about 9, you know, I started doing well, because there's a lot of festivals and competitions in South Africa. That's where I was born. My family are Italian, but they moved to South Africa before the war, Second World War, and you know, I was born out there. So, you know, I was about 9 years old, think I was winning these competitions. And
are we talking about dance competitions?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So now you've had 4 years of approximately of dance, and you're pretty accomplished.
Well, it seemed to go quite fast, really.
It was kind of natural.
I think it's like I say, you know, there's this amazing feeling, which I always have had, that I'm in my element when I'm doing it.
Yes.
And
you are yourself.
Yes, I found myself.
Yes.
In a sense, you know, this was something that, it wasn't just that I probably felt that I was quite good at, wasn't that? It was just something that I really enjoyed.
You know, I want to stay with this just a second, because this matters to me, this whole idea of discovering yourself. That,
yes,
that when you're doing something or being something or whatever it is, that you are actually yourself. It's not just that you like it or you're good at it or whatever. It's something integral.
That you feel you were meant to do.
Exactly, exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
And it's something that has stayed with me throughout my life and career.
Well, you were meant to do it.
But it is a strange thing, because I know that I have had young ballet dancers, you know, come to ask me, you know, this, oh, I want to be a ballerina like you, you know, what should I be doing? And I say, and I always say it, and I probably seem a bit harsh when I say this, I say, don't do it unless you love it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, it's a lot of hard work, there are lots of ups and downs, but don't do it unless you love it. Because I think it's, you get such rewards from it, but you've got to enjoy it, and you've got to be prepared for the hard work.
Yeah.
Like any career, really, but it's essential that you love what you do.
And in order to do what's required, you have to have that thing that you were talking about. Otherwise, you can't do it.
No,
you can't make yourself do it.
And it's got to come from the soul. I know it sounds corny, but it really does have to come from inside. Now I'm on the other side.
Well, wait. Let's wait.
Oh, okay.
Because I really do want to hear the whole story. So you're about nine, and you're excelling in exhibitions and festivals and competitions.
In competitions, mm-hmm, and exams and things. Yes, and I was being noticed by people, and various people from the Royal Ballet were visiting, and people would always, you know, suggest that I was seen by them. And at one point, he was the director of one of the Royal Ballet companies, and he said, "Oh, she must go to England." And my father said, "No, because she's got to finish her studies here. She's got, you know, I'm not sending her over at this age," because I was about 9, 10, 11, you know, around that age. And my father said, "There's no way." Anyway, at about 16,
still learning, still working,
doing,
still
yes.
doing, right.
But now,
just one
yes.
one question. I hate to interrupt you, but I'm so curious. When they said, "Oh, when you must see Margaret," how did you feel? I mean, were you shy? Were you proud?
I was always really timid. You know, my mother used to say, "Oh, you embarrass me," because you never say a word. And I used to say, "Well, you say it all for me."
did you mind when your father said you couldn't go off to England?
No, I respected that, because I think I knew myself that I was...
You weren't ready.
I was pretty immature.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. And you were very young.
I was too young. A further opportunity came up with another visiting performer. Well, actually, it was Dame Beryl Gray. And she also said, you know, that I needed to go to the Royal Ballet School. And again, my father said, not yet. And then at 16... my brother, who had started ballet when he was young, with 6-8 years difference. I have two brothers. One was 6 years old and one was 13 years older. So, but the middle brother and I were very close, because he actually started the ballet but got teased at school and within a few months gave up. But he loved it. And so he was like almost like my mentor, you know. He used to, in the home, he would coach me. I don't know how he knew, but he thought he knew. And so he'd put me through my paces at home. And he would watch me in these competitions, you know, and come back and tell me off or tell me I was great, whichever. Mm-hmm. So he was very keen on what I was doing. So I always said he was almost like my mother, my father, my uncle, my brother. You know, we were very close. And my mother somehow respected his opinions. So when he turned around when I was 16 and said, if she doesn't go now, she'll never go. You've got to let her go.
Wow.
And my mother said, oh, she didn't want to leave my father. And, oh, she decorated my bedroom to persuade me not to go. And my brother put his foot down and said, I'll take her. If you can't go, I'll take her.
Wow.
So he gave up his job in South Africa.
How old was he now?
Well, I'm 16, he's 20.
Early 20s.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, early 20s. So he actually resigned, but the company didn't want to lose him, so they transferred him to the London branch. So that worked extremely well. And basically, he was there with me until he met a beautiful English rose and married her. You know, and he was always very protective. And
he was a chaperone.
Yes, oh yes. And, you know, also helped financially the family. There was no grants, you know.
Oh, right.
The family paid everything, and obviously he's responsible for getting me there.
Wow.
You know, so I owe him a lot, and my family. But, so I went to the Royal Ballet School, and I was there actually to begin with. There's a funny story. South Africa had just become a republic. Prior to my arrival in England, there were so many South Africans in the company. South Africa had become a republic and now no longer part of the Commonwealth. Therefore, no more South Africans could enter the company.
Oh, my God.
So the moment I arrived in England, you were almost ostracized because there was the English girls in all these other classes. And the foreigners were put in the overseas class, of which I was considered now a foreigner.
Wow.
So visiting directors, anybody who's, you know, looking for talent for the future would come, but not to watch that class because no interest. In those days, you didn't, no foreigners in the company.
Wow.
So, and it was a lovely class. I've still got some wonderful friends with a wonderful American girl, Japanese girl, and a German girl. Yeah, it was fabulous. So we really enjoyed working all together, but we knew we had no opportunity to get into the company. And my parents, both Italian, my mother was sorting through some of her papers, no reason, just sorting my father's papers, and came across their naturalization papers. When they naturalized, they became British South African subjects.
Oh, dear.
But none of us knew. And this allowed their children to choose what nationality they wanted to be.
Oh, my God.
So when I went to England, I just naturally went on a South African passport, not knowing this. And when this paper was found, overnight, it seemed.
You became a British citizen.
I became a British citizen. And overnight, I was moved to the top class.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I mean, you know.
Well, if ever were meant to be, was meant to be.
Extraordinary, really. I mean, I still sometimes wonder how did God find that piece of paper and put it in front of my mother?
Well, it isn't only that. I mean, if you look all the way back, why would that doctor have recommended ballet, of all things? You know, I mean, when you're encouraging a child to have activity, you know, I think of Sports. Right, you know, right? Ballet. And if he was suggesting that you meet other children, ballet is an individual activity.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
So that in itself is unusual.
Yes.
And then there's your brother who's sort of coming out of the woodwork to make it possible,
yes.
Right? And then there's this. It's like a series of...
Yes. No, it was quite extraordinary, really. And then as soon as I was in that class, a year later, I was chosen to do one of the leading roles in the school's performance. And Dame Nanette Dawawa, who was our teacher then, she had retired from being director of the company, but she still, for years, right until her death, she had her finger in there, right. And everybody listened to what she said. And she was my teacher in the graduate class. And at the school performance, she was sitting next to someone, and she said, that girl will one day do Giselle. Had this told to me years later, you know. An extraordinary, but because about 2 or 3 years later,
You did.
You know, literally one of those, you know, dream come trues. I was chosen from the quarter ballet.
Yeah, we know you're going to tell us that story.
No, too long.
Oh, no, it's not too long. I want to hear it.
Now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, all right.
Yes,
well,
of course.
Giselle, there was this organization or a splinter group of the Royal Ballet Company that was called Ballet for All, which is an educational group, small group, only a few dancers, a handful, I suppose we're talking six dancers, would go around the schools and you would do a lecture demonstration. But at the time that I went out, it had developed into quite a big thing. It was now doing, we were doing Giselle. And they would do the whole history of Giselle incorporated within, you know, the dancing.
Now, I know this is a long story, but do you want to just say a little bit of the history of Giselle? Can you?
Well, that, oh my goodness, no, that's too long.
Well,
it's one of the great, great romantic ballets.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a wonderful, amazing role for any dancer to do, because it's not just the technical side that is a challenge, but it is the acting as well.
Yeah.
And Act One is a complete different ballet, in a sense, to Act Two, because you... The peasant girl, she's transformed into this willy and it's ethereal. And a lot of the style of the ballet is taken from the romantic period, the lithographs. So it has a huge history, and I don't think I can put this
all right.
Short little...
It's all right. It's okay.
Anyway, on this Ballet for All, I was doing Giselle, and... the director of the company came to watch a performance, and he said to me afterwards, you know, I'm really impressed. I knew he liked me because he had chosen me to go into the company.
And he came to see you.
And he came to see me. And he'd been very good to me because I had also injured myself just before coming into the company. I had been in a performance, and it was an open-air theater, and there was like mist on the ground, and I really had a serious injury. I dislocated my knee.
Oof.
And I had the contract in my hand. Dame Nanette de Valois came to see me in hospital to tell me my contract was assured.
Oh.
She was truly amazing. People always think that, you know, how this very strong, domineering lady. No, she was so humane, wonderful, wonderful.
A wonderful
lady.
Heart.
Yes, great heart.
But then, of course, you were meant to do this. So.
You know, anyway, so that my, you know, and I got into the company with this injury. That's not the best way to start.
No. Probably not a common way to start either.
No. And I had a miserable first year because I thought, you know, oh, I'm not on. All my contemporaries, they're all doing this. And I didn't realize how thoughtful he was, because a lot of the ballets, you have to kneel.
Oh, God.
You Les Sylphides, even Swan Lake and that. And they were all in it, and I wasn't. And it was because he was protecting my knee.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, he hates me. You know? I'm not even good enough to be
to kneel in a bit, right?
Anyway, 3 years later, he sees me do Giselle, and he says to me, one day, you're going to be doing Giselle, rather like Dame Nanette had said. Well, lo and behold, the next season, Giselle came into the repertoire. And to my, well, almost horror, because I couldn't believe it could possibly be true, there was the three principals' names, and then mine in brackets. Well, brackets means you're not going to do it, but you learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was called a ballet, and all they were all
principals,
you know, and the soloists had all been ignored. So it was like chosen from down here.
Right. To be sort of understudy, is that what it is?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I would go to the rehearsals, and I would feel so embarrassed, to be honest. And I went right into my shell, and I would sit in a corner and just sort of try to learn by watching. bathroom. He came in and he was angry with me. Get up and do it.
Yeah, right.
I said, yes, but, you know, Mr. Field, they're principals. You know, get up and do it. You know, so he made me learn it and do it. Because right. You can never really
no, you can't
by
sort
sitting.
Of, no,
you can't get it into the body.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You have to get in it.
Yes,
right.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So I did learn it. And there had been a rumor going around that one of the principals was not happy because there was one principal boy was going to have to dance with one cast and then with her. And she wasn't happy about that because she said, well, I'm not going to get rehearsals, you know. And lo and behold, the week of first performances, and this is Covent Garden, and
oh,
I'm in the corps de ballet doing a little waltz girl and a little willy, and he comes knocking on the door, and he was this very stern face, big black glasses, and he was said, get out of your costume and makeup, you're coming out front with me. And I was like, oh, I'm not even good enough to do it. This is bad news, you know.
Amazing.
And then as we're walking to go and sit out front, he said, you're going to be dancing it on Saturday matinee.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, you know, I didn't have time to get nervous.
No.
Because there was, suddenly we had to rehearse. He was also, had picked a young boy in the company as well. Who he had got to come to the rehearsals to rehearse with me so that I had a partner.
Right.
He wasn't originally cast, but because I needed somebody to rehearse with me in the rehearsals, he had brought this young boy in, and we danced it on the Saturday matinee.
Oh, my God.
And after the performance, which fortunately went well, he again, you know, came in this rather sort of strong manner, and he said, don't bother to get out of your makeup, just put your clothes on, you're coming with me. You never knew what he was thinking.
Is it good? Is it
yeah,
bad?
Exactly.
Right.
And he took us to the hospital where Dame Nanette had just broken her arm, I think it was, and she was in hospital. Oh. And he said, go in there and say thank you.
Oh, my God.
And he said, she fought for you to do this.
Oh, I have tears in my eyes. Amazing.
It was quite incredible, really, you know. And it is amazing just how much she influenced my whole career.
Yeah, your life, all, really.
Yes, and right through it, she was always there, you know, just almost guiding me or hinting to the directors. Do you know what I mean? She was always. And then when I even stopped dancing, I wasn't sure where I was going, you know, what I was going to do. And again, she opened the doors for me. And
well, hold on. Oh. Why did you stop dancing?
Oh, well, 25 years later, you know, quite a long time.
Yes,
and
yes.
And I had just had our son, who was 2 years old, and I had thought I would stop it when he was four because I wanted to be stationary in London, as it were, when he had to go to school.
Right.
But I woke up one morning and thought, I don't know, I hadn't been well following his birth. There had been a few problems, not with the birth, but, and I was struggling. I felt like every time I got myself strong, then there would be an injury or, you know, there would always
yes, it didn't feel
be
right.
something.
Yes.
And I woke up one morning and said, you know, what am I trying to prove? I've done everything I want to do. Yeah. You know, I think it's time to move on. And having made that decision, the hardest decision, is then where do you go from there?
Right.
And what do you do? I had, in the middle of my career, I had this fanciful idea that when I retired, I would have some place in the country where I would grow my own vegetables. I'd have an antique store, and I'd have a restaurant. You know, all my interests. But you know, when it comes to it, you have to rely on your what experience you have. And
you didn't
have that. I had dabbled with all these things, but not enough to sort of take the risk. And I realized I wanted to do something connected. But then you've got to find out if you're any good. And so then I went and did a teacher's course. And to my surprise, I felt I was all right. And really, it just developed from there. And when I started staging the ballets, I suddenly found that was the thing that I think I was always interested in, because I've always loved the coaching of dancers. And I think that I knew I could be good in. What I didn't know if I was any good in was to actually teach class. You know, you have to construct your class. You've got to have ideas of how. You've got to have your ideas of what is it makes good training. So I had to develop that.
Yes.
And I think you always continue to develop that. It's something that you're continually learning.
Well, theoretically, you learn.
Yes.
While you're doing what works better and what doesn't
yes.
work for
yes.
you.
Yes.
You know,
and you learn from other schools of training. You mm-hmm. know, you might not agree with everything they do, but you can incorporate it in your own training. So, yes, I think that, and I found that I really enjoyed it, and it was great to be able to see the results.
Yes.
To see how you could completely change a dancer with the correct training.
Wow.
And how you can develop them. So that has been incredibly rewarding. And a lot of people have said, oh, don't you miss the dancing? And I suppose I do, but I don't. Because I think I have received such great rewards from teaching mm-hmm. and the staging of ballets. To see how people develop and to see a ballet come to life, I find that incredibly rewarding.
And I need to ask, because I don't know really what it means to stage a ballet. You're not teaching, you're not choreographing, because
no.
the steps are already there.
Yes.
Right? So is this like blocking the ballet? I mean, do you understand that term? It's an acting term.
Yes.
Where people move around on the stage, or is this...
No, I'm teaching all the steps, everything.
That's part of the staging.
Oh, yes.
Yes, that you're
staging
teaching
the... Staging is teaching the ballet.
I didn't understand that.
And on the stage.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So
you have to know all the...
I've got to know all the
parts. All the roles.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, in some of the ballets, I've danced many roles, so it was quite easy. Other ballets, you have to learn them and prepare beforehand.
Right.
But I started doing this quite early on because I have a small company that's attached.
Before you stopped dancing? Or
oh, no.
After you stopped.
Yes.
Right.
Because alongside the teaching I was doing at school, I had started to do the staging of ballets for the company that's attached to
it. Of course, it's a natural
yes.
outgrowth of
yes,
teaching. You,
exactly.
you want them to dance.
Yes.
Right.
And so I started doing this, and, you know, it is a difficult thing, and, you know, not everybody's going to be good at it. But I found that, you know, it was rewarding to see how you could. It's almost like a picture, you know, you're
yes.
painting a picture, and you're putting them... everything together, and everything counts. It's not just the steps and coaching them in the roles and the acting. It's the musicality. You've got to have the right lighting. You've got to have the right costume.
Oh, it's everything.
Yes, everything.
You're the director.
Together. Yes. So, and I'm very much hands-on because, and maybe too much fanatical. My son would be, I'm too obsessive.
mm-hmm.
But it's got, you know, if you're going to do a job, if you're going to do anything, in my mind, you've got to do it properly. And you've got to do it 100% or more.
I wonder where you got that.
My mother.
Yes.
Very
yes.
much
if you're so. Going to dance, you have to sing.
Sing
and
that.
Yes.
yes, exactly. Yes, so...
And probably yeah. your son has it as well, but never
oh, yes,
mind.
Yes. He is funny because I noticed suddenly, you know, he may object to my being organized and...
Right.
and obsessive about doing everything perfectly. But I noticed unwittingly he's doing it.
yes. Yeah, they don't fall that far from the tree.
Okay,
so how long have you been staging?
Well, really,
and
it's
teaching.
The last... I've been teaching, and this is my 21st year.
Wow.
Yeah, so... and staging almost the same.
Yes.
As I started
yes.
straight away.
Yes. And so now...
But with professional companies, I've been staging in the last 7-8 years with the professional companies because I was doing it more with this graduate company.
Yes.
And then I started going abroad and working in Japan and actually in Georgia as well and America. I was in
How Europe. Did that happen? Do you remember? Or?
Well, it started off with Sir Frederick Ashton's Facade,
mm-hmm.
which I danced so many roles in it, and Alexander Grant, who owns the rights to the ballet, because Sir Frederick Ashton left it to him when he passed away, He owns the rights. And I'd actually danced the tango with Alexander Grant. And he wanted somebody to go and stage it. First one I did was Japan. I would go and teach it for a couple of weeks, or weeks sometimes I did it in. And then he would come and coach it, and we'd work together. And then we did it in Scotland together, and we did it in Oregon together, and then we did it here, you know, a couple of years ago. So that's how it started. Then it was with Two Pigeons, a similar story, and then it's just grown from that, really.
Yeah. So I imagine, I mean, I'm guessing, but I imagine there aren't that many dancers who can stage.
Well, no, because what happens is there are an awful lot of, mostly nowadays, not with the Balanchine, but with the English companies, most of the Macmillan and the Ashton and the Cranko ballets, all of those, the notator goes and stages the ballet from the notation.
Yes.
Nowadays, you know, in a way, it's like a musical score.
You might want to say, I know because a friend of mine's a dancer, so I know, but maybe you want to say just a couple of words about notation.
Well, notation is a form of recording the ballet. Originally, it used to be just on film, the old time.
You just had
film.
To watch it.
Yes.
You had to see it, right?
Yes. Or it was passed on by previous dancers. That's how ballets were passed down over the generations. And sadly, a lot of ballets were lost because there's no record of it. And then this Benesch notation. There's Laban notation and Benesch notation, and both are very good. But the Benesch is what's been used by the royal anyway. And so that is recorded by a notator. So nowadays when ballets are created, there's a notator sitting in and writing it down.
So did a dancer create the notation? Do you know?
I should know this.
It's like, because it's like dance shorthand, right?
Yes, I think it was somebody called like Joan Benesch, I think it was. I can't honestly remember. But I think she must have danced, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to create it.
You would
what
think.
She has
right,
done, yes. Right. But it's very clever. I don't believe that notation alone works.
No. It's cold, isn't it?
Yes. And you can't record everything. And even the notation and the film can work, but it's still not the same as having the individual teaching you, people who have danced the roles.
Right.
So what does happen is that, you know, notators stage it, and they will coach as well, but sometimes some of the people who own the ballets will request that because I had danced both roles in Two Pigeons, the both principal roles, I was asked to go and coach.
Follow up the notator,
yes.
Right?
But then since then, now they're letting me stage the pieces, so that's how it's sort of come about. But yes, all over the world. I mean, notators are very important people.
Yes.
And as I say, I think in conjunction with the film and also somebody who's danced the role to coach, it works extremely well.
Yes. But the point I was trying to make, I think, is that there may be a lot of notators.
Yes.
I'm guessing that there aren't that many people who can stage
the
way you do.
No, not so many.
Right.
However, having said that, the Balanchine Trust is a different story. They don't really have people working from notation.
It's all staging.
It's all staged from the dancers. They're former dancers.
Lovely.
Which is great.
Oh, yeah, that's ideal. It's ideal.
I think it's a shame that in England they don't do that.
Do you know why they don't?
I think because everybody used this notation, it became so popular in a sense that it was felt it wasn't needed. And maybe because there weren't former dancers who wanted to do it. I don't know.
Yes.
Whereas...
Would the dancers be more expensive than the notator?
No, not at all. But I mean, I think it's a great thing with the Balanchine Trust that they do this.
Because I agree.
I think it's, you know, I've worked with Sandra Jennings and Elise Bourne, and I think it's just wonderful to listen to them. I feel I was learning because I didn't work with Mr. Balanchine, and I would have loved to, but I didn't. But what, you know, they were they would make comments. Well, he used to place the hand, and he would say it was like putting it on a velvet cushion. And, you know, if you have that idea in your brain, you're not just going to go like that.
That's right.
You?
Yeah,
you know, you put this gesture to the boy's hand instead of going. I always get so annoyed when the boy goes like this and the girl goes
like that.
And it's gentle. You're enjoying what you're doing. You know.
Well, and as you say, that kind of stuff can't show up in notation.
No,
it's just not possible.
No, exactly.
Right. And the notator can't know it because all they know is what's on the page.
Yes. So yeah. The difference is there are some notators who work closely with the choreographer. Now, that is different.
Yes.
Because they will.
Because
have,
they bring that other thing as well,
right. And that's a very special thing when they have that ability to do that.
Yes. Okay. So, you are married to Ian Webb, who is the artistic director of the Sarasota Ballet.
Correct.
And I know that you are staged many ballets here.
Mm-hmm.
So we are about to launch on season. The Sarasota Ballet season. So are you here to stage a ballet?
Yes, and to rehearse as well with the various choreographers or staging people. So we're doing, the company is performing, I think it's the November program. There's going to be another ballet by Christopher Wheeldon, who had the great success last year with the There Where She Loves. People were bowled over by that. And there's another amazing pas de deux in this ballet as well. So I'm teaching that and staging that. And then William Tuckett is coming to stage his piece called Spielende Kinder. And that's a lot of fun. Lots of energy and lots of fun. But he's got a very limited time. So it's a piece that I also work on. So I will take it over once he's gone. I think it's February,
it's all right, you don't need to know everything.
We'll do some of the Ashton ballets then, that's right.
Okay, so what's the first one that you're working on?
The American, the Christopher Wheeldon.
Yes, mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
Yes, it's wonderful music, it's Dvorak's.
Ah.
Yeah, the title's taken from the music, The American, yeah.
Okay, so we will look forward to seeing
yes,
your staging,
I think you
right?
Will, I think you will enjoy it. It's very beautiful.
I am sure.
And I think the dancers will, because they so loved doing, it's funny, There Where She Loves. they loved doing that so much. They really got so much out of it. And I think they're going to enjoy this one as well.
Okay, so now I always ask the same question at the end, and that is, having lived a life that is all about dance, having devoted an entire life to an art, do you have anything that you want to say about that, about what that's like, about what it feels like, what might be good or bad, or take your time if anything occurs to you?
Well, I think it has been the center of my life. I have to stay for so long that I can't imagine it not being there. But my family is terribly important to me, and I think that is important as a dancer, to keep the balance in your life. You can't just be narrow blinkered. You've got to be able to see everything in the broader spectrum. And I think, in a sense, your family keeps you there.
So it's a cautionary tale.
Yes.
Yes,
it is. I think it's important to keep your feet firmly on the ground.
Yes, and that you can have both.
Yes, and it is. And I do remember there was a time in the company that, you know, people getting married, oh my goodness, you know, how can they have a career? And then when people started having children, oh my God, you can't have a career. You know? And it's wrong. You know, it is possible. It's hard work. I have to say that I think when you have a child, it is difficult to keep the dancing going.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, just physically,
yes.
There's, you know, you're not dancing that much when you're pregnant, are you? I don't know.
Well, I actually stopped quite early because it seemed like I wasn't going to be able to conceive, so I wasn't going to take any chances.
Right.
So I really stopped at about 2 months, I think. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some people carry on. But I think it would be hard. I've never been able to divide myself in too many parts. So if I had continued dancing, I think I would have found it difficult, because then I would have felt I wasn't being a good mother.
Yes, you couldn't give 100% to everything,
no, exactly,
right? It's
exactly
that thing that you have to do.
So this is me again.
I do.
Obsessional.
I do. But I think you were so fortunate and smart, because for one thing, you had, what did you say, 25 years of dancing before,
yes,
you had the baby. So you had that.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
And then you were smart enough to know who you are and what you needed in order to be okay. That if you continued to try and balance 100% dance and 100% mom, it wasn't going to work.
No.
Right. So I'm going to repeat myself. So you were fortunate, and also you were smart about yourself. And what that says to me is that, and I think this is true actually, you know, for you at five, you know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extremely important thing, I think, and a really unusual gift. You're not spending too much time thinking, oh, should I do this, or should I do that, or should I do... You know what, when you're in your element...
The right thing to do.
Right,
yes,
you know the right thing,
yes,
to do for,
yes,
Maggie, right?
Yes, yes, that's,
yes,
correct.
Yes, and clearly it has worked.
Well, I hope so.
Well,
yeah, it has worked for me.
Yes, it's a lovely life.
You know, there were times in my career when there were a couple of options, and sometimes I wondered if I made the right choice. But in the end, it's all sort of worked out well. You know, there was a time when I thought of transferring to the London, the resident company at the Royal. But the options were, I was doing 8 performances a week, of which probably 4, if not 6, were leading roles. And Covent Garden, my contemporaries there, were doing one Giselle in a year. I was doing sometimes 4 or 5 in a week, and 12 to 14 week tours. Sometimes more if people were injured or ill. So I weighed it up and I went, I would like to be in London. I'd like to have more time to rehearse. Maybe I would be better off if I had more time to prepare instead of always rushing to get these ballets on.
On the other hand,
one against 30?
Yeah, right.
Giselle's?
Right.
No, I'll stick where I am.
Yes, it's the difference between dancing and not,
yes,
really.
Yes,
really.
Yes,
but
yes.
Again, see, I think that you consistently make the Maggie choice.
Yes, maybe not everybody's choice.
No,
but
this
was, for me, it was the right thing.
Yes. I think that's where I'd like to stop. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank
this
you.
Was great.
Thank you.
So, making the right choice for you, as opposed to the choice that would be right for anybody or everybody else. As Robert Frost says, that is what makes all the difference. Even if you have to choose the road less traveled, the seemingly more difficult road. You can hear, when you listen to Margaret Barbieri, the certainty, the comfort that she was, as she said in the very beginning, and she knew at 5, that she was in her element, that was where she was meant to be. And that experience, this is my element, this is my home, this is what I am. There's just no way to overestimate the significance of that, the delight of that. And even as she says, you know, you have to be prepared for the hard work, it's not that hard when it's yours. It's almost impossible when it's not yours, which is, I think, why she cautions dancers to be prepared for the hard work. Because if you make a choice and it's not really yours, then it's too hard. But if you're doing what you need to do, I'm fond of saying to clients, you know it when the time goes by and you have not realized it. When you're immersed in it. I think the sports metaphor is that you're in the zone. When you're in your zone, you know it. You are you. And that is, of course, my mission. That is the message of the Lynn Show, that there is a you who you are. And finding that, finding you, and then allowing yourself to be that without the, oh, I might not be good enough, or I might not be as good as somebody else, or it might not make a living, or people might criticize it, or, oh, I don't know, you know all of the ors, all of the caveats, all of the reasons why not. But if you are you, if you are in your element, doing what you were meant to do, then all of those ors don't actually matter. There is a peace, a comfort, an ease. Ease is maybe the best way to describe it. There's a concept in my book, I call it civil war. That is when you are at war with yourself. There is nothing so debilitating as civil war. There's the one message saying, well, you should do this, and there's the other message saying, but I don't wanna, or that's not me, or whatever it is. That tug of war makes for not only the absence of ease, but not too much success. There's a line from a Rod McEwen poem. I'm not going to get it exactly right, but it's something like, I wanted to play baseball and my parents wanted me to play the violin, and so what they got was a solitary man. That has always stayed with me. The idea that there's such loneliness in not being who you are. So, of course, I am wishing for all of you the wonderful company of yourself. So, let me thank yet again the remarkable Josh Hackney, without whom this show could not be nearly as good as it is, however good that is. And let me say, as always, I hope you heard something that you can use in this show. Something that can help you. Something that inspired you. Something that got your juices flowing. Something that made you want to discover the you you really are. And something that will bring you back because, of course, I will be here next week. Same time, same station. And boy, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think
think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang, no. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give.